like you, dealing with their own journey from loss to growth, along with mental health experts, growth guides, all with the purpose of helping you heal better, improve your mind, body, and spirit, and find your new purpose from the loss and the tragedy that you have unfortunately experienced. Hi, I'm Tom Pasello. I'm your host. I'm a growth evangelist, as well as being a fellow widower, having lost my beautiful bride of 19 years, Judy, some 5 years ago. Today, we've got a guest that's joining us. His name is AJ Coleman. AJ is the author of the book, Keep Those Feet Moving, a widower's 8-step guide to coping with grief and thriving against all odds. And AJ, thank you so much for writing that. There's so few books for us widowers from widowers. So you're joining an elite group that's out there on Amazon and out in the bookstores. This book, it tells the story of AJ's grief journey, losing his wife, Corey, to brain cancer when she was just 33, and the trials he faced, not just in the grief, but now he was a single parent to his daughter, Zoe, managing his career as a certified anti-money laundering specialist and a fraud examiner. So an important career as well to be balancing in that, and so much more that he's overcome. Welcome, AJ Coleman.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today and engage further.
Yeah, thanks, AJ. I always like to start at the beginning. This, after all, is a love story. Tell us how you and your wife, Corey, met.
I was pretty straightforward. After a series of bad dates, I decided to try the online dating pool and met Corey just through a wink type thing. And we corresponded. We actually corresponded for about 30 days before I even asked her out. I think it was important to establish credibility and the relationship, and but wasn't sure what to expect on the whole dating, but we went out on the first date, and within hours, I knew I was going to marry her.
Wow, that's so awesome. And then you built a life together for a little bit. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was, a honeymoon was quick. We enjoyed it in the Mediterranean, and we thought married life was pretty simple, so we decided to complicate things and get a puppy. We decided also, from my career standpoint, we would relocate from Chicago to Scottsdale, Arizona, where I would then transition my career a little bit to helping my father down there. And we just started living life and just kind of growing together, seeing things. And one day she's like, I think we want to have a family. And I've always wanted one. And I said, yeah, let's do that. And it happened quickly. Thank goodness she was able to conceive quickly, and out came Zoe.
Yeah. But then things took a little bit of a turn, right, with a cancer diagnosis, which I know I've got experience with as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. It was in March, about 2 months after Zoe was born. Oh, and we were really just in my daughter's bedroom trying to hang some letters of her name, those gifts that people give. Yeah. And Corey was trying to direct me, like, where to put it, how to put it, the style. And then she started having issues speaking. And what she was talking was completely different than what we had done. I had thought it was just like a dehydration, her mom, new mom. I didn't really understand what to expect at that time. So I just took out a piece of paper and just had to write down a sentence or two. And what she wrote was completely different than what I said. And I thought, maybe again, just did dehydration. So I decided we were going to go back to the hospital where Zoe was born. They had all the blood work up from like 2 months ago. They couldn't look for trends or anything like that. But nothing could have prepared us for the response that we had gotten once we got into the emergency room.
Yeah, and it turned out it was brain cancer, right?
It was. The doctor grimly told us, you have a large mass on your brain. And
yeah.
You need to operate immediately.
Yeah. And so that operation occurred. Tell us a little bit about that and the sad part that, I'm so sorry that you wound up losing her.
It was very surreal. It was coincidental that her parents were coming down to visit and meet Zoe for the first time. the next day after we were in the hospital. And it was something where just a lot of medical discussions, just trying to understand what the next steps are, what are we looking at. And the day of the surgery, Corey was calm. I mean, you're talking about somebody who really didn't show any concern and just treat it like a routine. The surgery was very successful, according to the doctor, prognosis on, you know, how she went on the operating table. But then it was a long pause, and then that's when he said the type of cancer it was, which was a glioblastoma multiforme, which is the worst of all worst.
Yeah.
And that he said that the life expectancy was 1 to 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and AJ, I unfortunately have experience with that. My wife originally had breast cancer 5 years in, cured of that. But lo and behold, we're driving up to Maine to drop off my daughter at camp. And not too dissimilar of this surreal kind of experience, where as we're driving up, she's looking at the road sign saying, wow, what's up with Massachusetts that the signs are double? What did they do to them? And I'm like, double, you know, so it was that kind of disbelief. And she had trouble seeing that entire weekend. And when we got back, immediate MRI, that next day, our doctor's waiting for us in the driveway, pulls us inside and says, you know, midbrain glioblastoma, inoperable in our case. And same prognosis. It was the kind of, you've got 1 year likely to live. The blessing was that she actually wound up beating that back and being with us another 2.5 years.
Maybe a
year and a half of quality in that, but still it was a gift. When she passed away, in the book, you write, I've never been the same since then, but instead of mourning the loss, now I choose to celebrate Corey's life every day. And I love that quote. Obviously, I know I've gone through it, and brain cancer, I mean, no cancer is a walk in the park, but brain cancer in particular, there's a lot of trauma that I know, if it was anything like what I experienced, that you experienced. Choosing to celebrate, not easy when you've been through that, and watching what happened to Corey. Tell us a little bit about her passing and then the choice you made in this journey path.
Even though the prognosis was, you know, 1 to 2 years, after I dried up my tears after a few minutes, right? And I said, you know what? I got angry. And I said, we're going to fight this thing, and we're going to be beating the statistic. And one of the things after the surgery, Corey had lost mobility to speak. Her arm movement on the right side and the ability to walk, she would have to go through an aggressive rehabilitation and without any guarantee. And I remember when she came out of surgery, she was actually speaking Spanish, because as a Spanish teacher, the secondary language was in another lobe of the brain, not your primary. So I learned very quickly, and I learned to speak Spanish pretty quickly, but, you know, the memory started coming back a little bit. The English language kicked in a little bit, but she did go through a rigorous program and was able to walk with a brace and a little bit of a limp. But the right arm never had the mobility that she once had. But through that year, the first year that we had gone through this, it was a lot of just up and down moments with, you know, trying to raise a baby, trying to move back. We ended up moving back from Phoenix, Scottsdale area to Chicago, where she was with her family and where she wanted to spend the remaining days. But she never talked about the unknown, and neither did I. I was convinced that we were going to beat this. I didn't want to accept it. And I never really sat and prepared myself for the what-if factor. About 2 weeks went by after we had moved back to Chicago, and that's when we started getting into a groove. And she started really doing well. And I just thought, like, you know, for the next couple of months, that we just had this thing, like, really, we're going to prove those doctors wrong. But unfortunately, about, you know, 14 months later in May, we started noticing a little bit of a deterioration. And the speech was a little bit slower. The movement, we had just moved out of my in-law's house into an apartment just so I can go and have a place to just be by myself should the inevitable. And the greatest thing is that my daughter started walking a week before my wife passed.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I get this call, and of course I'm frantic. I was like, okay, what's going on? You know,
yeah.
She doesn't call me. She has never really called me because of her ability to speak. Usually I'm calling to check in on her during the day. And she goes, the kid is walking. And it was like, what? We knew Zoe was on the verge of walking at, 16 months. But it was just like surreal that she got to see it before any of us.
Yeah.
But when she had... A week later, I had gone into the hospital. They had some issues with some of the eyesight and the fluid in the eyes and in the brain. And it was just an unfortunate situation. But the final days that we had together, I tried to make the best of it. And the 2 days before she actually passed, I woke up at the hospital and I said, you know what, bring Zoe down. And maybe she can brighten up the day a little bit for my wife. What I did not know at that time is that we were almost at the end. And Zoe came to the hospital, crawled up on the bed, you know, 16 months old, and they got to spend some quality time together. And, you know, she kissed Zoe. I picked up Zoe and, you know, waved kind of goodbye, you know, kind of like that stuff. And Corey just kind of just moved her head and closed her eyes. We thought she was going to take a nap. And with brain cancer in this type of form, they just fall asleep and the body shuts down over a period of time. And I take a lot of comfort knowing that the last image that Corey saw wasn't me.
Yeah.
It was her daughter.
Zoe, yeah.
And that to me is what I deem a storybook ending.
Yeah, that's
because I could not have written any better. And that gives me the comfort that I can smile and say, you know, we're celebrating her life because yeah. It's just a fairy tale ending, even though we would love to have her with us. But it's the way she wanted to go that I was able to give that to her. And I take comfort knowing that I've done everything I could for her to give her that longevity, even when the doctor said that medication wasn't going to work. And I spent extra money to try to find something new. And, you know, put us through debt and everything like that. But here's the beauty, right? She got to see her daughter walk.
Yeah.
And she got to give her daughter a kiss and saw the image at the end. And
yeah.
To me, that's how we celebrate life. And that's how we move forward and take those images and knowing that we've done everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, AJ, the title of your book is Keep Those Feet Moving. Talk about the importance of that as a metaphor and just actually in practice in healing.
For a long time, I started thinking about blogging to talk about my experiences to help others. And I just could not find a catchy title or something that would just spark an interest. And one day I was just with my daughter picking up shirts from the cleaners, and normally I would take a right to go home through the neighborhood, but there was a freight train that was coming through, and I just decided to take a left and take the long way home, just so I can keep going. And I just said, I got to keep those feet moving, and then I just like, that's it. That's how it became. And then I thought about it a little bit more, and a lot of times when we're in grief, we stop in our tracks. We come to a dead end, we come to a wall, and we just don't know what to do, and we're looking for somebody to guide us. With Keep Those Feet Moving, it's a little bit of a difference than Keep Your Feet Moving. It's Keep Those Feet Moving, because we're moving forward. You know, not only are you leading yourself, but there may be others that are following you, right? If you have a family and you lose a loved one, right? The children may be following, maybe even your parents or in-laws and cousins. I mean, that's where those, it's like you're just going to keep those feet moving no matter what the odds are, no matter what barriers you face. As long as your feet moving, you have a chance to overcome. And that's how the significance of the title kind of played into my grief, but helping others overcome their grief.
And AJ, one of the ways where therapists help to solve trauma sufferers, PTSD in particular, is by forward movement. And there's a part of our brain where in the amygdala, when you are sparked by trauma or a threat to your environment, your survival instincts kick in and you can flee, you can run away. That doesn't solve anything. You can freeze, go into possum mode. That doesn't solve anything too. But you can fight. And there's a part of the brain where moving forward kind of sparks that fight circuit in your brain. And this is primitive wiring that's in there throughout our evolution. And it will actually help you to overcome that trauma and quell the amygdala and these feelings of grief and anxiety and anger that you have. And you can do that by EMDR therapy, which is sometimes a light that moves back and forth. Well, the therapists use that because they can't normally get out in the woods and walk with you. But the best way to implement it isn't through light therapy or through cross-tapping, stimulating both parts of the brain. It's actually through walking in that forward momentum. And so there's studies of rats in the lab, and those that move forward actually are more likely to overcome trauma. They're more likely to win. They're more likely to succeed. So I love that you titled the book, Keep Those Feet Moving, because it literally is the way that we can reprogram our grieving brains not to curl up in a ball and play possum, not to run away and hide from what we're faced with, but to face it front on and to actually overcome it. And so kudos for that as the choice. One of the other things that you wrote about with Keep Those Feet Moving is that grief and dealing with it is not a sprint, right? It's not a timeline. It's not a get over it quick and get back to it. Even though you were faced with a lot of things where you did have to do that. I mean, your daughter was only 16 months, right?
16 months.
And you indicated that there was a little bit of financial strife there. I know mm-hmm. that the move from, as you write about, from Phoenix to Chicago was not an easy one. It was not a career move. You did get into debt and those things, which some of us do through medical mm-hmm. processes and other things. So, you really had to come back quick, but you know, tell us a little bit about that part of the journey and then how you're thinking about it, where it's not a sprint, even though you had to get back to things quick, but that you really are in this marathon of a race.
Yeah, after the diagnosis and the expectancy, you know, we made a quick decision that we were going to bring her back to Chicago so yeah. she can be with her family.
Yeah,
and I needed help. You know, I couldn't care for her, care for a child, look for a job, manage the expenses. And we had a house in Phoenix, Scottsdale area that we had to pretty much dump and sell at a loss just to get that off my operating expenses. And it was a challenge to come back because I got to pack up the house. I have to make decisions that usually my wife would make. You know, do we keep this? Do we not keep this? Do we take it? And there was just things that I probably left that we probably should have taken and vice versa. But it was all, you know, I worked a full day early in the morning. I'd be up at 4 a.m. I'd go to my father's office and I'd work till about noon and then work to get to the hospital for the rehabilitation to spend the next 8 or 9 hours with my wife until she was time for her to go to bed. And then I'd come home basically about 9 o'clock. At the time, you know, my in-laws were living with us in Phoenix area to help as well. and they were watching Zoe while I was able to do other things. I started packing up the house. So we moved back, we put things into like a storage area, and we just continued to move. And the idea between a marathon race, a lot of times people, as soon as they come out, they run as fast as they can, and then they get winded, and then they start walking, they start all the different strategies that people have, right? Yeah.
Take a big setback, yeah.
And I've been through enough grief in my lifetime, not just losing a loved one, but my childhood passed, and I've learned to sort of compensate with philosophical ideas, philosophical meanings to help drive me forward. And one of the key notions that I have found is when you're in a mourning phase, you're in grief, you're really fixated on the why aspect. Why did this happen? Why me? Why couldn't this happen to somebody else? You're asking a lot of questions in the why. And the more time you spend in that why space, the deeper you fall, because you're trying to rationalize something that just can't be changed. It's already in the past. How to move forward is where you focus on the where aspect. Some people might equate it to like the how. You know, how do I move forward? How do I do this? But I look at it from a where, because keep those feet moving. We're moving, right? We're going somewhere. Where do I want to go? Where do I want to get to? What stopping point do I want to take a look back and say, look how far I've come? And that's part of where that marathon idea comes through, because as you're racing through and you're going through it, you're going at your own pace. People will tell you what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing from their own perception, which is fine, which is great, but you have to make that decision yourself as to whether you want to abide by what they're suggesting or go at your own pace. There is no blueprint when it comes to grief.
Yeah.
I believe it's a lot of it's a mindset.
Yeah.
How you can accept and continue to move forward celebrating that person or that loved one or even a pet, life. And
yeah.
That helps you make a difference moving forward. And that's why I do believe you can talk about it. You can share your experiences with others, but also you can just be a mentor and just listen to others and not get emotional yourself, because you know you're celebrating that life. So what I've taken that journey, I went from the why to the where, and that's where I am today, still on the where.
Excellent. Blogging, I know you mentioned that. Journaling, really important for a lot of people. How was blogging and talking to others, how important was that in your healing process?
It was important because it got me to sort of think forward, right? I can't be sharing my experiences, promoting the forward movement if I wasn't doing it myself. And sometimes when you write something out, you take a look back at your masterpiece and you're like, oh, wow, did I really say that? Did I really think that? And as you share those experiences little by little, you're starting to make a difference, because people enter blogs, they enter post podcasts at different phases of grief. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they just need somebody that they can resonate to, that's just like them. And it helps them unlock that may be that why aspect to promote them into that where. The blogging was information for me, was like, I'm really coming to terms that I'm moving forward. And it was exciting. It was tough work. All those English classes in high school and grade school, they only get you so far.
But, yeah, I think for me, it was a chance to be much more mindful about what I was going through. For me, I didn't blog until much later. So we're talking probably 4 years after, maybe 3.5 years after. And so a little bit was forensic, kind of thinking back of how I dealt with things, the mistakes I made, and a way to document some of those through it. And almost a way to kind of give myself some grace and forgiveness by just getting it out there and sharing it. And so for me, the blogging, yes, I was doing it for others. Yes, I thought that I had some thoughts that could help others, but honestly, it's probably more for my benefit and cathartic for me than it may be in the healing process for others. And perhaps it's both. And so that's, I think, good. And I know yours have been the same way. In the blogs and in the book, you talk about four methods to cope with the loss of a loved one and find your balance. What are those four methods? I'm always looking for formulas in a system as a systems engineer. So it's like, all right, tell us what the four, AJ.
Yeah, I mean, the most important is what we just covered a little bit. It's just staying in your own marathon race.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to have their own ideas on how you should be coping, how long you should cope, and what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes sense in a sense because you're relying on support. But sometimes, at the end of the day, you're the one that has to move through those grief states.
Yes,
so that's really important to be able to stay in that race. The second one is, I always like to talk about, is letting the sunshine in, right? We all like sunshine. It promotes happiness. It promotes sort of that warm feeling. But taking it one step further, that sunshine, it's like, think about it as your loved one giving you kisses in the morning. At the night, you know, if you just think for a second and you celebrate, you look up, and you just feel that warmth. A lot of times people in the morning, they just stay in their house, they stay in their bed, they stay in their room with the drapes closed. And understandably so, right? Morning is just, everybody has their differences. But by just looking at the sunshine and feeling that warmth and changing your mindset, every time that sunshine is out, I feel the kisses and the warmth. It might be a little strange to say, but again, it helps you move forward.
Yeah.
The other thing is humor. Humor is probably one of the best medicines that we all hear, but it's actually very factual during the morning. It's because you need to take your mind off of what you've gone through. And sometimes that humor, watching a silly show, listening to something of a comedian, or just in general, I mean, there's sometimes you just watch animal videos or something where the little monkey falls off or something like that. And what happens, it releases some of those endorphins within your system. And you almost, in a sense, feel uplifted.
Mm-hmm.
So humor is really important. I know people say, well, I'm mourning, I can't find humor. And again, that's because you're in the why phase.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're moving toward that where you're looking, and it's just taking time out. And the misconception about mourning is that people feel like you have to be mourning all the time. You can't smile, you can't laugh, you know, you should be very straight-faced and in the dark. And I disagree with that respectfully. And that's where humor comes in. It just brings out that. You know, the last thing always, I am not a professional. I am not licensed or anything. A lot of my viewpoints in philosophical ways are just who I am. But I find that counseling is important. Support groups, maybe people who are in the same boat as you. Just listening to other stories. Loved ones are great resources as well to lean on. But be careful because sometimes they are a little too much, right? But it's always important to have others around you that understand who you are.
Yeah.
In turn, you know, I know what it's like to walk in your footsteps. Well, that's not the truth. Nobody knows what it's like to walk in anybody's shoes. Mm-hmm. You know, we can understand, but we don't know what it's like to walk.
Yeah. I think having that non-judgmental support is there. I think sometimes, and I don't know if you ran into this as a particularly with how young your daughter was, but judgment that goes on, you know, can AJ handle it?
Yep.
I don't know if that's a question that got popped out there. I know it was one that got popped out with me. I had two daughters, both were teenagers. My wife did an amazing job raising them. So they were very independent and very capable. There was community doubt that was raised. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you faced that too.
There was a lot. I mean, there are people I think thought I would crumble in terms of emotionally. At the funeral, I did not cry. I did not show emotion. Deep down, I knew I had to lead everybody else, right? People were looking at me. They were looking for strength. They were waiting to see if I was going to get emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. And that tells me that, okay, you can have your emotional time in your private moment, mm-hmm. but when you're leading others through a very difficult moment, you've got to stay strong.
You need to be stoic, yeah.
And that's kind of where I started moving toward. And I think over time, people started saying, okay, well, maybe he does have it. Maybe he does understand. I mean, don't forget, I'm a young parent, 16 months old, really on my own. Like, what did I know about raising a little girl? I mean, the hospital, as soon as you leave the hospital with a child, they don't give you a manual that you can turn to page 52 and say, okay, this is what happens when they're getting fussy. You know, I had to kind of figure things out on my own, ask some questions here. And there are times I got stuck in some awkward places, like especially when it comes time to change a diaper in the men's bathroom where there's no changing table. And if you look around, I'm not sure I want to put my daughter anywhere. So it's like I'm trying to change her diaper vertically. And I'm trying to maintain that. But it wasn't a common sight to see a dad with a daughter. Mm-hmm. And we saw that as she continued to grow in preschool, into kindergarten, where when the registration part, there wasn't anything that said, what your marital status was. It was either single, married, separated, divorced. There's nothing for Will.
Yeah.
So I left it blank. And I got a call, and they're like, well, you're not properly registering her because you left something blank. I said, well, I can't check anything.
Yeah.
I had a household, maybe I can do that. But it was some challenges along the way where sometimes, especially in preschool with my daughter, when there was time for Mother's Day and people were making projects for their moms, and my daughter would just sit there not doing anything and act out a little bit, say some things like, my mom's dead, what do you want me to do now? And because she exhibited a little bit of anger and aggression, I get the call to come pick her up, and I'm like, people, you gotta read her profile.
Give her a different, slightly different assignment. Yeah.
Like, just go up and say, hey, Zoe, you want to make something for your grandmother, make something for your aunt. And I think it would have been a much smoother landing.
And people mean well. So on that credit, they are trying to look out in some ways. And then in others, it's just, too many kids to manage kind of thing. For my daughters, it was a key day at college. They're both at the same college, Pepperdine, out in California. And it was a mother-daughter tea. And the beautiful thing was my older daughter was able to take my younger daughter to it.
Oh, wow.
But that didn't mean that mom was still not missing in the event. And so both of them did ultimately leave in tears, even though they were there to support each other. So that stuff will continue to happen, AJ, even years later as she gets older. All those special events and occasions.
One
of the things I wanted to talk about with you and want to make sure we leave time on is you were able to find love again. Talk about that.
I never wanted to date again, right? I lost my wife. And as time went by a little bit here, I was still young, 33 years old, turning 34. People said, well, AJ, you're young. Meet somebody. You don't want to spend your life by yourself. And I didn't understand that concept, right? People wanted to fix me up. There were times where I'd be at the playground, engaged with my daughter and meeting some single ladies and have different intentions of, I think, what play dates are for the children, but that sometimes they revert to play dates for the adults. So I was trying to navigate through the dating aspect or something like that. But it was a challenge. And then an old childhood friend of mine, Tracy, who we grew up together a couple houses down from each other when we were first babies. We had kind of intertwined with each other's lives throughout time. And she was a single mom, divorced with twin girls, and was struggling a little bit with her dating aspect, but our was really more of a friendship. I confided to her with certain things, and one thing led to the other where I started trusting her with Zoe. Like if I were stuck at work, whatever reason. Like, I trusted her to go pick up Zoe, to feed her, you know, to help me out with a little bit of things while I worked on my career. And vice versa, we started. And then, you know, got to be when Zoe is about 9 years old. She sat me down on the couch and said, "Dad, I need a mom. I know nobody will replace mommy, but I need a mom.
Yeah.
So, like, I need to have interaction with getting my nails done. You know, I can take her to get her nails done, but I'm not sitting next to her. I'm sitting usually in the waiting thing here trying to deal with the fumes." But she missed that. And she felt that she was missing out on mom-daughter type experiences. And it was right around the time that Tracy and I were, you know, very close. We were getting closer from our friendship and really trusting each other to the point where it was like, you know, what happened? So we ended up just, you know, falling for each other and realized. And I think the hard part for me was I had to talk to somebody first. Because I had such guilt of moving on from what I would say a marriage to another commitment. And I never addressed the unknown with Corey. We never talked about, should something happen, I want you to go out and date. I want you to be with somebody and continue to live your life. Even though I know her and that's what she would want and I would want the same for her, we never talked about it. So it was always that struggle of guilt. And once I had talked to somebody about it, I started opening up and saying, okay, it's accepting. It's okay. But I didn't start dating until a couple of years later when Tracy and I were friends. And we decided to get married about 8 years later after Corey had passed.
Okay.
And I did the respectful thing. I went to Corey's parents, just shared with them what my intentions were, involvement. They were very supportive of it. And we got married. It was great to have that companionship feel. But I will tell you, and I pointed this out in the book, I mean, there are times where I sometimes call Tracy Corey.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Where, you know, I can't remember, like, oh, this is really familiar, like, we were here, and she'll be like, no, we weren't, I think you were with Corey. So, I mean, there are times where you get a little bit of mixed up of which spouse you're with.
Yeah.
But, you know, we never stop loving our spouse, even though we may be in the presence of a companion or somebody else.
Yeah.
We still love our spouses and our wives, and I think it's really important. When my time to go, I will be buried next to Corey.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for Zoe, knowing that her parents, her biological parents, are together, as we are. And having Tracy to support that notion, and she's been very supportive of my feelings about Corey, and she's done everything she can to supplement. It's not easy.
Yeah. You
know, almost like being the other lady, right?
Yeah. But that's amazing.
Again, that goes back to the where. Where do I go? How do I find companionship?
Yeah, and it's not a replacement. It is that. Exactly. I love the concept of the heart expanding. Like, you still have that original love, and now there's a new, different relationship, different love, different experience with Tracy, which is great, and it sounds like she's wonderful, and her acceptance and her support of you and Zoe, because I'm sure Zoe has those moments as well. What's the one piece of advice you'd like to leave with our widowers, AJ, our growth warriors today?
Boy, there's a lot. But I think the best advice that I can give you is, no matter how difficult it may be, continue to celebrate your loved one's life.
Mm-hmm.
You can share the memory. You can create memories together. I find myself sometimes talking out loud to Corey out of nowhere. It just comes to me and I'm like, oh, this. But I'm celebrating her life, not because she's gone, not because of what she's accomplished. I'm taking her with me. I'm going on vacation. I'm taking her with me. I'm celebrating. And I think that brings a lot of comfort to be able to move forward with your life, where you're never really going to ever stop mourning, but you're living life again. And that's where that celebration comes, and you can smile, you can share great stories, but the key is just never stop celebrating.
Love that, AJ. Thank you so much. The book, Keep Those Feet Moving, keepthosefeetmoving.com is where you can find information for that. AJ, we're going to share the book in our recommended reading section. There are not enough books written by widowers for widowers. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for putting down your story, sharing it with us today. And thank you for writing the book.
Great. Thank you for having me and the opportunity to come today to speak about it.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening into the Growth Through Grief podcast. If you like what you heard, please hit the like button, share a review. If you liked it, please, your comments are always welcome. And be sure to subscribe to stay up to date on the latest episodes. Until next time, Growth Warriors, keep growing.